everyone. This is Steve Donahue with another episode of the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. Today's episode is number 65, and what we're going to talk about today is the movie Farmageddon. My oldest son, my wife, and I watched that over the weekend, and I've actually got a real treat here. I've got my oldest son with me, and we're going to dialogue about that show. But before we do that, I have some introductory matters to take care of. First of all, our affiliate focus. Our affiliate focus for today is Vision Forum. And the reason I like Vision Forum Ministries and the material that they provide through their magazine and through their online store is that you can get really good quality books, videos, DVDs, all dealing with the family and leadership and ministry and discipleship. And just a really great resource there. And you can also get really great toys for the kids. They've got good quality boy and girl toys. And so check out Vision Forum. You can get that at the right center column on the website. Also on the website, make sure that you're registered as a user. That allows you to get all the updates of when we have new podcasts out, new blog posts, videos, whatever they might be. You'll be able to hear about it right away and don't have to keep checking back the website. And also it allows you to make comments to the each of the shows. I do encourage you to give comments. Best way to give me a comment, though, is email. And you can reach me at steve@thelegacypodcast.com. And then make sure you're following us on all the various social media and sharing us with your friends and family on Twitter, YouTube, and on Facebook. And then finally, if you like the show, I ask that you consider becoming a Legacy Partner. Our Legacy Partner program is $30 a year, and with that, you have access to the exclusive member site, and there's a couple of discounted programs on there, and you can also support the show at less than 25 cents an episode, so consider that. So that takes care of the introductory information. So again, I have Graham with me, who's my oldest son, and he is the one who is mostly responsible for our farm. He takes care of all the meat breeds of production that we have on the farm. And so he is interested in all kinds of things farming and has read lots of different books from Joel Salatin to other authors as well dealing with the issue. And so when we found out about Farmageddon, we all watched it together. And the movie Farmageddon basically is a story about primarily dairy farmers, but also some other kinds who have had various authorities come in and confiscate or shut down or some way prevent them from making various sales to the public. And it's quite an interesting show and something that is really quite eye-opening to a lot of people, especially if you're not familiar with the challenges that people have when it comes to trying to produce food and then sell it to the consumer on small farm scales. If you've read the book by Joel Salatin, Everything I Want to Do Is Illegal, this would fall right in line with that book, because it certainly covers a lot of the difficulties that small farmers have when it comes to providing food for local markets. So, Graham, I have just a couple of questions I wanted to dialogue with you on. First of all, say hi, Graham.
Hello.
All right. First of all, were you surprised by anything that you saw on the show Farmageddon?
Well, I wasn't really surprised. I mean, some of the things I found interesting and that they is with as far as they went, but I kind of knew about a lot of the things that went on as far as authorities, you know, confiscating food and trying to shut down small farms. It's nothing new.
Right. Yeah, we get all the emails or a lot of the emails from Polyface dealing with some of the information from the what's the legal service that's
Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund.
Farm to Consumer Legal Defense Fund,
which by the way has a big part in the movie.
They do. In fact, they are interviewed several times talking about the legal ramifications of some of the problems that were encountered there. What would you say was the most disturbing part of the show for you?
Well, I really think the most disturbing part was when they came to a family who had a co-op in out of their house, and mainly I think they sold mainly dry goods, you know, grains and beans and things like that. And they came, and they had several children, and they put the whole family in the living room and held them there at gunpoint, and went and confiscated pretty much all the food from their co-op, and then also took much of the family's personal food, such as like a whole cow they had just had processed and several chickens and lambs and everything. And I just, you know, it's one thing if they're confiscating food that they don't see as fitting to sell or whatever, but of their own personal food, you know, that's just that's going way too far.
Yeah, what was the, do you remember the amount that they said that they took in terms of their food was like $20,000 worth of food or something they said that they took?
Yeah, it was quite a bit.
Yeah. And the thing that was probably the most disturbing to me was that Amish farmer who they came in and they were all with gunpoints.
Yeah,
and,
Mr. Nolt.
Yeah, Mr. Nolt. And, of course, he asked if they had a search warrant, and, of course, they did. So they came in and they confiscated all of his dairy products that he had produced from his farm. And, of course, being Amish, he didn't want to resist any of the authorities that were there because they're non-aggressive. And so, he didn't resist. They're taken away in handcuffs, even though he was not resisting this. They were taking away everything away. It disturbs me to see.
It disgusts me. I mean,
yeah,
it's just horrible.
It is. And the worst thing about it is, you know, a lot of these, I want to say raids, they're not really raids, but a lot of these government bureaucracies that come in to interfere with the farmers and what they're producing, you know, they come in with these big guns and, you know, everybody's got guns and some of them had bulletproof vests and, you know, they looked almost like SWAT teams coming in to try to take away people's food as though these guys were going to try to, you know, form a militia and fight them or something.
Some of these places had FBI agents even coming.
Right, right. And remember the one where the guy, they come into the vegetable farmer's market or whatever?
Yeah, it was a vegetable stand, basically, in the inner city somewhere.
Right, and they have their guns drawn, and they're looking behind the watermelons like someone's going to come out of the watermelon and shoot them or something.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
It's just crazy.
There wasn't anybody in there.
Right, right. Well, what do you think the real problem is with this whole situation? I mean, obviously the authorities were saying that, you know, they're violating various laws by selling raw milk, or they're violating laws by not having permits, or, you know, selling things in co-op that can't be sold, and, you know, things like that. And so that's what the authorities are saying. And, you know, what do you think is the real issue, though?
Well, I think it's kind of a combination of a couple things. I mean, one of it is the large corporations don't want the competition of small farms, you know, companies like Tyson or ConAgra or Monsanto or whatever. And so they lobby the government to pass laws in the name of food safety, you know, that are just not practical for small farms, such as having to have USDA inspection or, you know, expensive licensing fees or whatever. If you butcher 5 million chickens every day, a $500 licensing fee is not much. But if you're only going to butcher 10 and sell them, a $500 licensing fee is a lot. And so that's part of it. And then I think, you know, while the big corporations, you know, have bad motives, I think some of the government people really are convinced that this food is just horrible for you. And some of them, you know, they don't want to lose their job, and they're told if they don't do what they've been told, they'll lose their job. And so I think it's kind of a combination of all those things.
Yeah, I would agree. I think that's a good synopsis of the real problem. I think that the issue is real, that there were probably some police officers there who, you know, they didn't want to go and arrest the Amish guy, but, you know, that was their job. That's what they had to do, and they were following orders. That just goes to show, and I'm going to put a link in the show notes, why it's important to have organizations like Oath Keepers, because Oath Keepers is designed to help make sure that various authorities, whether they be police or whether they be military, whatever it is, that they are keeping the Constitution and they're upholding the Constitution regardless of what laws or what commands are given from various authorities on high. And so I think that is a real issue. I also think that the issue of the legislation that's put in place in cooperation with the big companies is not practical for smaller companies, and they small businesses just can't really comply. or they go out of business. And so you either have to not comply and be out of compliance and be illegal, or you have to not run businesses. And there's so many people today, so many small farmers that are willing to take a stand and say this needs to be done regardless of whether there's regulations on it or not. And that's admirable that they're willing to even be arrested for the sake of providing good food for consumers.
Well, one other thing, too, that's very interesting is that a lot of the people who are high up in the USDA and FDA were formerly employees of these mega corporations like Monsanto and ConAgra and all. I think the person Obama put as the head of USDA was a former Monsanto employee, or, you know, high up in Monsanto.
So I think that one thing it just goes to show, though, is that, you know, of course, the Republicans have been strong advocates of big businesses a long time. And so, of course, there's always been a revolving door with the corporations. But, you know, supposedly Obama was the one that was going to help solve that. And then, of course, what do we find out? He didn't do anything different other than what has always been done by the Republicans. And so, you know, neither party really is working to try to advocate for small farmers.
And the other thing I think that's interesting is that, you know, a lot of people, you know, they say, well, see, it's not the government that's the problem. It's really the big corporations. But it wasn't Smithfield and Tyson and Monsanto that were coming into these places with guns and raiding everything. It was the government. And if the government would step up and say, no, we're not going to do that because that's not right, we're going to, you know, have freedom, then that wouldn't be a problem. But instead, they, you know, instead of losing their lobby money, they do what those people want.
Right. So it's not so much that the big corporations are entirely at fault. They are at fault. But they're not the only ones at fault. If the government wasn't there to enforce whatever rule they have, then and it wouldn't be a problem. So it's the government is the bottom line problem. So what then do you think is the solution?
Well, I think one solution that a lot of the people in the sustainable agriculture movement talk about, and I think is very wise, that we vote with our food dollar. And if you say, oh, that's horrible, but continue to buy, you know, food from Walmart, and you know, you're not helping the situation any. You know, by supporting small farmers, if we opt out of the food system and start supporting local producers, that shows a lot. And if we put some pressure on the big corporations, they might be a little bit more apt to make some changes. And then also, you know, voting with as far as elections and things like that, you know, the people that are so high up and try to get these people into the USDA and FDA that have been big guns in the conventional agricultural movement, you know, they, you know, we don't want to put them into office. We want to put people who are staying for freedom and want to deregulate the food system, not make it worse.
Right. Yeah, I'm all for opting out. I think a couple of other additional things. One is that, you know, a lot of times people say, well, we just need to make a playing field that is fair for both the large corporations and the small corporations. And so, you know, if we're giving X amount of subsidies to the big corporations, then we need to give X amount of subsidies to smaller corporations or smaller companies. And I think that's really the wrong direction. The right direction is to eliminate all subsidies so that the large corporations and the small corporations will then be on the same playing field, but that the government will be small. Because as soon as the government gets involved with giving the subsidies, then, of course, there's interference and intervention and regulations along with that. There's always strings attached anytime you get money from the government. And so the only real way that we can reduce this problem, I think, is by minimizing the amount of government. But I think that there's another important step to the solution, and that is growing your own food or producing your own food.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, obviously, you know, we've got a little bit of farm here, and Graham wants to be a full-time farmer, and so supporting small farms is a great thing, and not everybody's going to be able to produce their own food, especially if you live in a metropolitan area or something like that. And so there's a real need for small farmers.
Well, and that's another thing on the line of government regulation. Although it's not necessarily government regulations, but even a lot of neighborhoods, they don't allow. I mean, there's people who've been told they can't grow a tomato plant in their flower garden because that's considered farming.
Right.
And I mean, obviously, that's not necessarily government regulation, but it's still, you know, it still is just out there, and it's not helping the food system any.
Right, exactly. And of course, the smaller the area that you're working with, the smaller the government, whether it be a you know, homeowners association, or whether it be a county administrative office, you know, the smaller the scale, the more you can likely provide some changes to it. And then, of course, the largest would be the you know, the world national organizations and things like that. And then next would be, of course, our own government. But so sometimes those changes aren't going to be made. But when we grow our own food, it's a lot harder for a government entity to come in and say, you can't eat that. And so if you have your own cow and you milk your own cow, it's a lot harder for them to come in and say, you can't drink your own milk. They'll try, but it's a lot harder for them to do that. And so the more that we can produce our own food, the more that we can go to our next door neighbor and, you know, barter for some food, or, you know, trade your tomatoes for their milk or whatever it might be, the more that we can opt out of the regular system, the better it will be for everybody. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, that's right. I agree.
You know, there was one part in the show that almost sent chills up my back. And it was probably one of your favorite parts, too. And that was near the end when Joel Salatin was asked something about...
if you could speak to the...
Yeah, if you could speak to the whole organization or whatever, or that's causing all this. And he looked right at the camera and he says, "What is it about freedom that you hate so much?" And
it's amazing.
That hits the nail right on the tee. What is it that people are so afraid about freedom? What is wrong with me buying some milk from a neighbor? What's wrong with me going next door to my neighbor and trading some chicken for their eggs? There shouldn't be anything wrong with that.
Yeah, there shouldn't be.
But unfortunately, there is in many cases, in many jurisdictions, there's a real problem there. And, you know, one of the things that we like to emphasize in the Legacy Podcast is being able to have real, true freedom and personal liberties. And we need to make sure that in the area of food and production of food, that we are going to leave a legacy for our children where they're not restricted as to what they can put in their mouth or how they're supposed to get it there, but that we can leave a legacy where they have true freedom to be able to consume and produce the kind of food that they want and sell it to whomever they want under appropriate contracts.
Well, you know, Joel Salatin makes the point in a lot of his talks and all that, if we can't even choose what we want to put in our own body, what does it matter if we can go and have the freedom of religion, the freedom of speech, you know, if we can't even choose what we want to put in our own bodies as far as food and...
That's right. I mean, there's very few things that are more intimate than eating. And we should be able to choose what we do with the food that we eat or how we get the food that we eat and that we consume. And it shouldn't be anything with any kind of authority's business as to how we do that. So anyway, if you have not watched the movie Farmageddon, I'm going to put a link in the show notes to that. I really encourage you to watch. I think it was like only an hour and a half or something like that. You can watch it on YouTube for free. And it's a great show. It might be disturbing to you, but I think sometimes we need to be disturbed into action, and sometimes we need to be disturbed into really thinking about what kind of legacy we're leaving both in our economy and with our liberties and with the food revolution. And so with that, this has been Steve Donahue with the Legacy Podcast, helping you build a multi-generational legacy of abundance. What will you do today to build your legacy?